All right, let's dive into a fascinating Supreme Court case you guys sent us, Roseman v. United States. It really raises some interesting questions about what it means to be involved in a crime, even if you're, not the one who actually commits the main act.
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher when it comes to accountability and the reach of the law. Where do you draw the line, right?
Exactly. Okay, so imagine this. Got a drug deal going down, things get a little tense, and boom, shots fired.
Happens all the time, right? Well, not really. But in this case, the big question is who actually fired the weapon? And that's where Justice Roseman, our defendant, comes into play. He's convicted not for firing the gun, but for aiding and abetting the crime simply because he was part of the drug deal.
Okay, so he's there, he's involved in the drug deal, but does that automatically make him responsible for any and all mayhem that might, erupt?
Well, that's the million-dollar question the Supreme Court had to wrestle with. And to really grasp it, we need to look at the two key federal statutes at play here. First, you have 18 U.S.C. Section 924C, which essentially states that if you use or carry a firearm during a violent or drug trafficking crime, you're in for some serious trouble.
Yeah, that's mandatory minimum sentences, the whole nine yards. It's a big deal.
Right. And then we have 18 U.S.C. Section 2, the federal aiding and abetting statute. And this one says that if you help someone commit a federal crime, you're just as guilty as the person who actually did the deed.
So where does Roseman fit into this puzzle? We're not even sure he had the gun right.
Precisely. And this is where things get a little tricky. Aiding and abetting, it's not simply about being present at a crime. There's a two-part test. First, you got to take some action that furthers the crime. And in this case, Roseman's participation in the drug deal itself is enough to meet that requirement.
Wait, so even if he was just hanging back in the car while others, were handling the gun, just being involved in the drug deal makes him guilty of aiding and abetting.
Exactly. It's kind of like that classic law school example. Imagine a group of people robbing a store. One person's distracting the owner, another's grabbing the goods, and another's behind the wheel of the getaway car. They all play different roles, right? But they all contributed to the crime.
Okay, I see how just being part of the bigger picture could meet that first part of the test. But what about the intent? Did he intend to aid and abet? That seems like a pretty crucial piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely. And that's where Justice Kagan, who wrote the majority opinion, really dives deep. She zeroes in on this idea of advanced knowledge. Did Roseman know about the gun before the drug deal went down?
So it's not just about knowing a gun is present. It's about knowing that the plan involved a gun from the very beginning. Why is that so crucial?
Because, and this is key, having that advanced knowledge gives you a choice. You could try to convince your buddies to ditch the gun, or you could, walk away from the whole thing entirely. You have the opportunity to say, hey, this is not what I signed up for.
So it's about having a chance to make a different decision. It's about saying, hold on a second, this is going too far.
Precisely. It's about having the chance to back out. Now, think about that classic getaway driver scenario again. Even if the driver didn't initially want the robbery to involve weapons, if they knew about the gun beforehand and still chose to drive the getaway car, well.
They've knowingly become part of an armed robbery, not just a robbery. They knew the risks and they made their choice.
Exactly. Their actions show that they intended for the whole scheme, armed robbery and all, to succeed. But what if someone only finds out about the gun during the crime in the heat of the moment?
So the gun appears, and no one had mentioned it before. Would they still be considered to have intended to aid and abet a crime involving a firearm?
Now that's where things get murky. The Supreme Court seems to suggest that just discovering the gun during the crime might not automatically equal intending to aid a crime where a firearm's involved.
Okay, now I'm starting to see the nuance here. It's not just about a gun being present. It's about when you knew about it and the choices you made with that knowledge. But wait a minute, what about Roseman? He didn't just roll over and accept this, did he?
No, not at all. His lawyers, they argued pretty passionately that he had to have specifically wanted the gun to be used, not just, been aware of it. They were pushing for a much higher bar for intent.
So basically, they're saying he may have known about it, but didn't actually want it to come into play. Did the Supreme Court buy it?
No, not really. The court, they made it clear that just knowing about the gun in advance, that's enough to show intent for aiding and abetting, even if you weren't exactly thrilled about it.
Wow, that's a pretty significant ruling. It seems like it could have some major implications for future cases. But I know there was a dissenting opinion in this case too, right? What were the concerns there?
Yeah, Justice Alito, joined by Justice Thomas, they weren't exactly on board with this idea of shifting the burden of proof over to the prosecution. They felt like it created some potential problems down the line.
So instead of the defendant having to prove they didn't know about the gun, now it's on the government to prove that they did. That seems like a tough task.
That's the heart of their argument. Justice Alito, he was particularly worried about scenarios where someone helps commit a crime, and then later on they just claim, oh, I had no idea about the gun until after the fact, you know? How can the prosecution actually disprove that? I mean, proving someone's state of mind, that's incredibly difficult.
That's a really good point. It does seem like it puts the prosecution in a bit of a bind. But isn't proving intent always a challenge in these kinds of criminal cases?
Absolutely. But Alito's dissent, it highlights a very real concern. How do we balance, right, holding accomplices accountable, but also recognizing those situations where someone may be present at a crime, but they don't truly intend for things to unfold in that specific way?
It sounds like this ruling might raise even more questions than it answers. But isn't that kind of the nature of these landmark Supreme Court decisions?
Yeah.
It sets a precedent, but then it takes years of rulings in the lower courts to really iron out the details.
Exactly. Think of it like dropping a pebble into a pond. Roseman, that's the pebble. And we're just starting to see the ripples spread out from there.
So we've got the facts of the case, the relevant laws, the ins and outs of the Supreme Court's decision. But I've got to ask, why should the average listener, why should they care about this? What makes this case relevant beyond just a legal debate?
You know, that's a great question. This case, it has implications that go far beyond just, you know, drugs and guns. It really makes you think about criminal liability, about the role of intent, about, you know, the nature of the choices that we make.
It's about more than just who pulled the trigger, right? It's about a much bigger concept of responsibility.
Precisely. Roseman, it forces us to consider this question. When are we truly accountable for the actions of others? And are there certain circumstances where that accountability might be lessened?
Really makes you think. And this whole idea of advanced knowledge, that could potentially impact all kinds of criminal cases, not just those that involve firearms.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime there's a question of aiding and abetting the precedent set by Roseman that's going to come into play, it could affect everything from, you know, white-collar crimes to conspiracy charges.
It's a good reminder that the law is constantly evolving, right? And even rulings that seem very specific, they can have a ripple effect across the whole legal landscape. So what's the big takeaway here, the one thing you want our listeners to walk away with after this deep dive?
I think the biggest takeaway from Roseman v. United States, it's this. It's a case about drawing lines in the sand. It asks us to carefully define the line between participating in something and intending for it to happen, between, you know, knowing something and wanting it to happen, between being present when a crime takes place and being responsible for that specific outcome.
And as we've seen, those lines, they're not always so clear cut.
No, not at all. And, you know, that's what makes this case so interesting and so important. It really forces us to grapple with the complexities of the legal system, with the nature of criminal responsibility.
A lot to chew on today, but before we wrap up, one last question for you. Does the Roseman decision, does it strike the right balance? Does it do a good job of holding those accomplices accountable, but also recognizing situations where someone might be there when a crime happens, but didn't really intend for it to play out in that specific way?
Well, that's a question that's going to be debated by, you know, legal scholars and judges for years to come. And it's a question I think each of us, you know, as citizens should consider as well.
What a thought-provoking way to wrap up this deep dive. We've definitely hit peak legal intrigue for today.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey, hasn't it? Exploring this case. Roseman v. United States, it really shows you just how complicated the law can be, especially when you start talking about things like intent and, you know, who's really to blame. It's not always so simple, is it? No, not at all. It's like you're, you know, wandering through a maze of gray areas, trying to figure out where the legal principles end and, you know, the ethical questions begin. And then, of course, there are the real world consequences, right?
And as we saw, even the Supreme Court justices, they don't always see eye to eye on where those lines should be drawn. It really makes you realize that the law is always being, you know, interpreted and reinterpreted.
I think that's what makes our legal system so fascinating, though. It's a constant conversation, right? Back and forth between different perspectives, all trying to strike that balance, you know, between fairness and justice.
And Roseman definitely added some fuel to that fire.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to these aiding and abetting cases.
Oh, absolutely. This case, it's going to be debated and cited for years to come, I'm sure. It's going to shape legal arguments in all sorts of ways.
Well, I think we've officially reached the bottom of this legal rabbit hole. We've unpacked the details of Roseman v. United States. We've looked at all the legal complexities, and we've even tackled some of the bigger philosophical questions that it raises.
Hopefully this deep dive, it's giving you a clear picture of how the law actually works, especially when it comes to this this tricky concept of intent and what it really means to be held accountable for what other people do.
Maybe you'll even start to see these legal nuances, you know, when you're watching movies or TV shows. You'll be like, wait a second, that's just like Roseman v. United States.
Exactly. You know, and maybe this case will even, you know, spark some interesting conversations around the dinner table. After all, these legal questions about responsibility and intent, they're really questions about how we live our lives.
What a great point. Well, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, and we'll see you back here soon for another fascinating exploration.